This case for argument is United States versus Traylor. Ms. Pollack.
Please the court and counsel. I'm not going to stand before you here today and pretend that this is the best case for appeal that I have ever brought before this court. The standard of review.
It's a strong opening.
The standard of review is extraordinarily difficult for defendants claiming sufficiency of the evidence. And even though this isn't the strongest case, I still felt that it was entitled to review by virtue of the seriousness of the sentence that the defendant received here, which was a sentence of mandatory life in prison.
So I take it that you would concede that your entire appeal rests on a challenge to the credibility of the cooperating conspirators.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if we assume that their testimony was credible, that would be enough to sustain the conviction.
It would, Your Honor. But the question would be whether or not the jury should have been able to rely on the credibility of those witnesses. And, you know, given, I'll just point out the main facts for the court, which I realize probably aren't going to be persuasive, but the fact is that these two gentlemen were, this is not your usual case.
I always find it funny when you call them gentlemen.
These two dudes, by their street names, I don't remember, but they are the individuals who were not, this is not a normal case of where there's a lower person flipping on a person up the conspiracy and up the conspiracy. These are the two top guys, and they are testifying against anybody they can get their hands on because they're both facing mandatory life sentences.
Yeah, but the jury knew they were co-conspirators who, had received breaks for their testimony. And
the jury knew that, but the question is whether or not they were so unbelievable by virtue of their lack of credibility that the jury shouldn't have believed them.
Yeah, but once the jury's found them credible, there's nothing we can do unless the facts they testified to were physically impossible. Right?
I understand that, Your Honor. The only thing I would say in response to that is two liars and an idiot do not a conspiracy make.
And two liars and an idiot.
My client being the idiot, the one who still hung out with these guys knowing that they were involved in something terrible, although he wasn't a personal participant. I mean, you heard the testimony at trial. You read the testimony at trial. He's a driver with no driver's license who's making trips for a childhood friend because his wife kicked him out of his butt and he's homeless. I mean,
And you think that's unusual in our view of the world?
What I think is unusual is the fact that these two co-conspirators are testifying. The only guy they could find because they already flipped on each other was my client. And so I think that by virtue of the just – it's completely unnatural the way that this proceeds in district courts. I mean, the feds don't flip little tiny couriers – or flip these big two guys against this little tiny courier. My guy was an idiot for hanging out with them, but there's no proof other than their testimony that he participated in the conspiracy. And by virtue of that fact, like I said, my point is that two liars and one idiot do not a conspiracy make, and I thank the court for its time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Mr. Hartzler?
Unless the court has questions, I have nothing to add.
I do. Was there an ostrich instruction in this case?
I don't believe so. I don't recall that.
So, I mean, the government attempted to prove actual knowledge of the conspiracy.
Well, the two co-conspirators testified against him. Yeah, I don't see how an ostrich instruction is going to work here or would have been appropriate.
What was the best evidence that he knowingly participated in the conspiracy?
I thought it was that the very best evidence was that day when there was a telephone call that were recorded between, I think, all three of them. They put one call on hold and talked to him, and he's on his way to pick up the drugs and things of that sort.
Yeah.
It was very strong evidence to put those two superior cooperators against the man that was the courier but had two prior drug convictions, so he faced this mandatory minimum sentence.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I understood the evidence that he possessed the backpack, but what I wondered was, what was the best evidence that he possessed the cocaine, that he knew it was in the bag?
On that particular day?
Yeah.
Was fingerprints on the bag, interior bag, was pretty damaging.
Well, yeah, it was his bag, no question.
In addition, his transportation carrying that bag on another day, I think it was the same day that he was...
Same bag.
Surveilled, and then they found, I've forgotten the name of the fourth defendant that didn't cooperate, but he was found arrested that day with cocaine, I believe on the same day that this defendant came down to Decatur to Champaign by bus, wherever it was.
Thanks.
Okay, you're nodding.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hartzler. Ms. Pollack, do you have anything further? Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. And, of course, we thank Ms. Pollack for accepting the appointment.